Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Good day, everybody. Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Special guest today, a former Blue Claw. We haven't had a ton of these guys on in a while, but we go back to the 2009-2010 Blue Claws and find a guy who had a very nice big league career, just retired, Trevor May. And he'll sit down with us in just a few minutes. He finished up his career this season with the Oakland A's, 21 saves for Oakland this season, pitched for the A's, pitched for the Mets for a couple of seasons, and most of his time in the big leagues with the Minnesota Twins. He was a Blue Claw in 2009 and 2010 and helped the Blue Claws win back-to-back South Atlantic League titles. He had a 2.56 ERA in 15 starts in 2009 and a 2.91 ERA in 11 starts in 2010 and was lights out in the postseason those years. He made four Blue Claws postseason starts, 22 and two-thirds innings. He gave up one earned run and struck out 32. He was 19 and he was 20 those two seasons with then the Lakewood Blue Claws from Kelso, Washington, Trevor May. And he wrapped up his big league career the last week of the season with the Oakland A's, first weekend of October there, and was kind enough to spend a few minutes with us on Hook, Line, and Splitter. Lightstar Energy Group, a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users. Tailored products and contracts, lower cost, personal attention, and outstanding service. 732-722-5880 to learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. So without further ado, we bring you one of the best players in Blue Claws history, the just retired right-hander, Trevor May. Our guest is Trevor May, 2009-2010 Blue Claws pitcher, and had a great MLB career, just retired a couple of weeks back. Trevor, thanks so much for joining us. Great to see you again. How you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
So we'll come back to your big league career in a little while, but why did you decide to retire now at this time?
I thought it was as good a time as any. It's been something I've been thinking about quite often for like the last year or two, just kind of everything that comes along with playing the game and the time commitment and the, you know, having to be traveling constantly and it just takes a big toll on your family. It takes a big toll on your partner. It takes a big toll on your parents. Like, and my parents getting older, it's just a lot of things. And I really love where I live and I love the Northwest, and, I haven't got to spend much time up here, and as long as I can remember, I've always looked forward to, you know, spending my falls and my winters up here, and it's never been a lot of guys would say, like, are you ready for the season to start because you're bored? I'm like, no, like it's never because I'm bored. I'm always really enjoying what I'm doing, and that's a blessing and a curse in a lot of ways, because dropping the things that you're working on sucks sometimes, but I'm also like, once I got in the swing of things, like, I really love playing. So I'm gonna miss playing, but I think that I just, the best way for me to put it, I've been asked the question a lot, as you can imagine, recently, it's just like I just wanted to do some other stuff, and how I played and how, you know, whether or not I could continue to play didn't really factor in as much as wanting to.
When you got to the ballpark there on October 1st, I think Sunday, October 1st, did you know that was it? Had you already made that decision?
I had. I actually knew. So the thing that was kind of going on behind the scenes is I had an incentive written in my contract that I had no intention of getting, especially after how going on the IL for that month, I was like, there's no shot. And then It turns out that I was really, really close to being able to get it at the end. I had to finish games, and I had only been finishing games. Like I had like 20 straight games where I finished the game. So I was like, oh, I might actually get this thing. And on the 30th of September, I got the incentive in a situation. It was a safe situation. We had to go hit a homer to get a 4-run lead, but in Anaheim, and I knew that was probably the last I was pitching. So I went out there. You know, if you watch it back, I go out there and I like take the whole stadium in. After Shea Langeliers behind the plate knew he had known all year. He's funny. We've had a funny back and forth on the plane every time. He's like, "You're coming back for another year. Like you're coming." That was he's like because he's a rookie. And we really enjoyed playing together. And he like the hug was a little longer. I pointed up into the crowd for the first time because my wife Kate was there. She knew. We kind of quietly had it be a celebration. I knew, and there was some, it was bittersweet for sure.
So yeah, 2 years with the Blue Claw, I guess kind of two half seasons with the Blue Claw, second half of 19, oh sorry, second half of 09 and then second half of 10. Looking back now, what do you remember most about those 2 years? Obviously you get to win two championships, which is pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. I had a lot of really great teammates on those teams. A lot of guys who made it to the league and are continuing, like Travis d'Arnaud, still up doing it. We had a bunch of guys that were drafted with me too. So like that was kind of your first, my first meaningful baseball as a pro. Not that, I mean, I'll be honest. In 08, I also won the GCL championship, but like I
There you
also
go.
showed up way late for that. I was like four. I only pitched like four times, 3 or 4 times. So I wasn't like even. I didn't pitch in the playoffs. Like I was shut down. So I was just there watching. But these ones, like I was part of it. I was like the game one starter and the first one as a 19-year-old, which was really cool. It's just all those like you learn how to be. Those were the my first couple of years, like being like, oh, like I'm pretty good. Like I'm pretty good. Like. You show up when you're drafted and everyone's like you. Everyone throws as hard as you. Everyone's 6'5". Everyone was big. I was drafted with like the whole draft class in 08 was 6'5". Everybody, all the righty pettibone, pitchers. And
Brody Colvin,
Pettibone, Colvin, Knapp,
Jared
like just
Cosart,
crazy.
was he in your class? Yeah, I think he
Cosart
was.
was a year after me. He was a year after me in 09, but Colvin was 09 as well, but like they, these guys were there's always a crop of righties. So like you look around, you're like, oh, I got to find a way to like separate myself. And then I had the good, I was extended spring training, which wasn't ideal. You don't want that. And then I got to go to low A and win a championship and throw really well. And the next year, do the same thing. And it gives you confidence. So like, I know that I can this, I'm good enough for this level, so let's see what the next one is. Like you just keep wanting to see if you're good enough for the next level. So that was the first time that like getting promoted happened for me, and that was a wake-up call for sure, but it meant a lot. I mean, fun little fact, I actually was at the All-Star game doing the radio this year, and I physically ran into Jim Murphy, and I had not seen Jim since I think 2010 or 11 when we played together in high A. So that was pretty crazy. He lives up here now,
Yeah, he's
and so
selling real
12
estate.
years, 12 years selling real estate. Yeah, doing great, married, or getting married, I think. You think he's engaged? He was always that guy, the guy who was just kind of staying single. And so yeah, he was great to see him, but it was just crazy, like crazy thing. And he was like, I've been keeping up with it. So he was there too, and I remember having conversations with him because he was, a senior sign older from Washington. And he was just like, always like, dude, like you're really good. I remember him telling me that when I was 19, and that meant a lot to me. So, I remember all that stuff. It was a blast.
I know you spent most of the time in the American League, but you played a couple of years with the Mets. Did you run? I'm sure you ran into Dusty a couple of times,
Oh yeah.
when he was with
I
the
saw
Phillies, of
Dusty every
course.
single
And
time. Yeah. We had about bunch of great conversations that I asked him about because I'm assuming Huck's like 28 now or something.
so Huck. I think Huck was
He's like
five.
23.
I think he
No,
was
he was
five in
six.
2019, six in 2019. He was the bat
Was
boy.
19 or 20. He's in college.
Well, no, it doesn't. He was at, I know he went to Charlotte first. I don't know if he's still there. He was a catcher for the University of Charlotte.
Oh yeah.
I don't know if he's
That's
still there,
crazy.
transferred somewhere. But yes, he definitely played collegiate baseball last season. I don't know where he's going to be this year, but yeah. So yeah, he was
Yeah, I
yeah,
saw
he was
Dusty
five or
and I
six.
saw Lundy too, all the time.
Yeah. So yeah, he was the bullpen
Bullpen coach.
coach for the Phillies, yeah. So what when you were here, you were 19 and then came back 20. What did you learn at that, at that age? What didn't you know then that you kind of wish you did?
I wish I would have known what carry was. That would have been nice. Because I had it. And the way I was pitching was I was learning to pitch kind of against myself. So like that would have been nice to have a better understanding of like why I have success and when it is. But yeah, just like knowing I'm glad I didn't know what type of journey it was gonna be and how long it was gonna take. I'm glad that's something I didn't know. That was ignorance was bliss in that situation. But yeah, knowing more about that, and then just like I wish also that I would have. This is maybe a little bit more relationships related, but like I wish I would have known or focused more on creating like a bunch of like really. Because I don't keep track of a lot of guys, and I wish I would have made more of an effort to do that. Because
It's not easy.
it's not easy. It's very hard to do. Like, I don't blame myself that much, but like, I wish that if I made a little bit more effort, I think that I'd be in a better place now. And now I'm trying to go back, and it's interesting. But that's what kind of happens when you have a year where you know you're going to retire. Like all this stuff kind of becomes the forefront, knowing seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. So. It's one of those hindsight things. I don't think there's a way to do it except for in hindsight. But other than that, like I'm pretty happy with how things I learned and how things went.
You had two different types of managers. They're both excellent, Dusty and Mark Parent. In the 2 years you were here, what how do you kind of reflect back on the two of them in back to back seasons? Because they both did a great job, but they definitely had kind of different styles.
Definitely different styles. Mark was definitely more old school, backup catcher for 13 years. That's kind of how you roll. I actually ran into him in the big leagues too when he was with the White Sox for a short time, and Nick was with him, and the boys were with him, saw them too. So, yeah, those were different crazy years. But you getting both ends of the spectrum a little bit was pretty awesome. And then I had Dusty in high A too, and then I had him in double A. So like he was my we were growing up together, and it's funny. Then we were in the big leagues like for the same amount of time. So. Different paths, but we have our experience is very similar. Yeah, like just kind of like the kind of the hard nose, a little bit more hard nosed, punch him in the mouth type guy, Mark Parent, and then Dusty's definitely more soft spoken. He chose his one time to yell at the team every year, come in the clubhouse and throw some stuff and do his thing, and then that wasn't his style, but he knew he had to do it once. So like learning that those two guys existed. In the game, and then of course everywhere I've gone since then has been someone's been they're on that spectrum somewhere, anywhere from Dusty Wathan to Mark Parent on spectrum.
That's funny. Mark did that. I never forget this. It was you were not there yet that year. You were in high eight at the time. And they had beaten Asheville the first 2 days of the season. The first day they scored 8 runs in the first inning of the first game of the season, beat them, won the second day, and then the third day lost like a ho-hum game, like 6-2 or something. And then I go in the clubhouse to see Greg Legg after the game, which I did every day. And the clubby's like, I wouldn't go in there. Like, what do you mean? Like the game ended like 20 minutes ago. Whatever. Like, I wouldn't go in there. He's like, the manager's not very happy, and he's kind of yelling and throwing stuff. And it was like the third day of the season. I'm like, okay, so I guess he'll be a little
The
different. But
style.
that was his style.
Twins
So,
had one too. Twins had Doug Mankiewicz. He was very similar when I came over. Everything they told me, like he's Mark Parent, the same guy.
that's funny. So I looked this up. What was it like facing some of your old teammates in the big leagues? You faced D'Arnaud. He was 1-for-2 off you in the big leagues. Gose was 0-for-1, and Jonathan Singleton was 0-for-1 with a walk. And you had faced a couple of those guys in the minors too. What was it like? You get up to the big leagues, you might not have seen these guys in years. What was it like facing some of your old teammates in the big leagues?
It's interesting. It's all three of those guys too, because I lived with D'Arnaud after he was traded to the Blue Jays in high A. Me and DeFratis and Diekman and D'Arnaud All together. And Julian
Wow.
Sanson.
I
Don't
didn't
forget
know
about
that.
Sanson.
There you go.
So we all lived together that year because he was in Dunedin. And so like I just, gave him the tip of the cap. And then Ghost was wild back. It was like 14, 15 is when I faced Ghost.
Right.
And I think we had chatted before the game or whatever. But like the crazy thing is Singleton, I faced Singleton my second ever big league outing in 2014, and I didn't face him again until 2023. And he popped out
Correct.
to end a game.
I looked it
It's my
up.
first save
I'm
of the year.
impressed you had that down pat.
Oh yeah, no. But I remember I saw because I lived with Singleton too for a year in high A. The next year,
Yeah.
with him and Juwan James. So like we shared a house for 6 months. So like I know Singy pretty well. And his journey's been insane. I
Yeah.
was gonna be honest. I was thinking
Yeah.
earlier, like, is that 7 year deal still going? I don't think so. I think we're past it.
No, I don't think so. But he was back.
At least
I mean, they
last
were,
year.
yeah, he played in the ALCS 2 weeks ago.
He is, but I don't know. I think he was a minor league free agent. I think that
Oh, yeah, no,
is
new deal, but he's still going. Yeah.
he's still go no, he is still going.
Yeah, yeah,
That's the
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah.
He was with the Brewers and I was like, oh, he's back. This is awesome. I thought he was, I didn't know because I look up at him and Cosart too. Cosart technically I think is still playing, but like he's been hurt for the last
Yeah.
2 or 3 years. But like he's not retired. So I
No.
like looked him up. I know Colvin retired a long time ago, but it's just all so it's pretty crazy. But yeah, facing those guys, Darno too. Darno, the last time I faced him was not a great. I went right on the aisle after I faced him last. So I'm not happy with my stuff. But I remember all those things vividly. Maybe not the Ghost one as vividly because I don't think it was as big of a spot. But the other two, yeah.
So you got traded while you were in the Philly system. How did you find out you had gotten traded?
Twitter.
Really?
Yeah, in 2012 I found out on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then I got a call from Terry Ryan, Twins, and then about 25, 30 minutes later, Drew Romero called me.
And that was in the off season, right?
Yeah, it
Yeah.
was on the like the December 12th, like a lot of that stuff was happening. Winter
For Ben
meetings.
Revere. Yeah. What were your initial emotions like when you got, because that's something that not every player experiences, and I guess you never really expect it to happen.
Yeah, but a lot of people forget around that time, guys that were at my level who were on the where we were on the prospect list, and if you were like a high prospect and then you maybe didn't pitch high enough, good enough, and you're gonna fall down a couple slots, you're on the block. And yeah, it was just kind of Ruben's thing, man. He was just like he traded the batch of prospects every offseason, and I dodged like four of them, and I was like, well, there's no one else left,
Yeah.
and then. And then I went and that kind of was like, I was kind of like one of the last couple before that kind of, I think that was 12. Like it was right after I think the next year is when the Phillies didn't make the playoffs. And then now we're here.
Yeah.
But up
Yeah.
until then, that was the end of like the 08 to 11 kind of run. So I just kind of saw it coming. So it was bittersweet a little bit. It was like, everyone, like they drafted me. I'd been to the bank, like the place is electric. It's like I want to play there. I'm gonna play there. This is where I'm going. And then to have that kind of change abruptly is scary. And I gotta meet new people, I gotta figure out how this next organization runs. So everything's different. But then you're like, but then one organization says, hey, we're good. So once you get that, you don't want to get that while you're still in the organization. And then another organization is like, we want him. So being wanted by another place, like I was feeling like I needed a little bit of a clean slate. I didn't throw as well that year, and I wasn't very happy with how things went. And so, it's like you shake it up a little bit and maybe get to approach it in a little different way. And I did. And fortunately, I had to go to New Britain, which was way worse than Reading, for sure. Not even close.
I can imagine they're not a they
Just
moved
the
to
feel.
Hartford. Yeah.
Hartford's beautiful. Hartford, the city's
No,
awesome. It's.
yeah. No, they moved
But
the well they
gosh,
took that team franchise and moved it to Hartford because they
oh
needed
yeah,
they could have got a new stadium in Hartford. How
that's
did you
it.
find
That
out
place is terrible.
you made the big leagues?
We were in Louisville. No, we were in Louisville. I pitched my last start in Louisville, threw okay, and we were going to Indianapolis when I was in Rochester. And first day we were there, I'm throwing a bullpen, and Pitching coach is like, hey, let's go light one today. Okay. Like, he's like, don't get hurt because you're going to get called up today. And I threw, he didn't say it. I was like, I threw like a 20 pitch guy, and usually I throw long ones. So I'm like,
Something's up.
okay. Thumbs up. So then I was in the, I didn't have to chart till 2 days before you start. So I was just in the dugout and hanging out. And then we, game's over, and I'm like, waiting to see if I get called in the office. And I go and sit in my locker or whatever and just like look at my phone like everybody else. And we're just 5 minutes go by. And I'm like, oh, well, all right. Yeah. I don't know why. I just really want to. And then Gene Glynn, our manager, who already walked through the clubhouse, came back out. He's like, oh, guys, sorry. I forgot something. Trevor May's going to the big leagues. And like he like went and like gave me a hug, like just offhand. Like he deked me. He deked me on purpose. That's kind of he did that. He, sometimes he called people in, but every once in a while he just announced it. Like as we're walking to the clubhouse, just announce it while everyone's up and, you know, around. So that was pretty cool. And then I got to call everybody and went to Oakland.
Who was the first person you called, or parents?
My parents and then my girlfriend right after, who's my wife now. And then I called my oldest sister because she is on the West Coast. She was the only one who had still been like available for the call because it's like 11:30 and I was a long game. And then my brother and sister were both in New York at the time. So I was like, I sent a group text to them, like, hey, I know in the morning if you guys want to go, that'd be great. And then my agent right after that.
Where were the Twins? Like, what city?
Oakland.
Oh, you had to go all the way to Oakland.
Went
And
to Oakland from there,
what
yeah.
do you remember about your first start?
It was terrible. I remember not being able to feel any of the seams of the ball. I remember thinking about how massive that stadium was. And this was, you know, 2014. The A's were good, the John Donaldson days. Gave up my first big league hit to Sam Fold, who I was in spring training with in 13, who's now the GM of the Phillies, which is
Now is the
just the
gym of the Phillies.
weirdest. Who is the weird?
That's
All a
pretty
bunch of
funny.
guys I played with are GMs now. Skip Breslow is about to get a job. Played with him for 2 years,
He got it in
and
Boston.
he did. He's
Yeah.
the and he's from there and big. No pressure, dude. I saw him in Arizona when he's Arizona assistant with the Cubs. He's just standing watching a. I threw in a minor league game and he's watching the game I was in. And I'm like, I don't like this, Greg. I don't like this. He's like, what? I'm like, you're no, you can't be a GM yet. I'm not that old yet. And then we talked about how I threw 20 sliders and 23 pitches. Just for fun, I went to a minor league game to throw only sliders. yeah, so I don't even remember what the question was, but yeah, all that kind of stuff. It was fun.
Back to the podcast in a second. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company of the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call or text us today at 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963, or richgreenlawns.com. And when shopping for appliances, electronics, and mattresses, you want a local hometown team that you can trust. That's PC Richard & Son. PC Richard & Son is a friendly and knowledgeable sales team, installations and repair service you can trust, and the guaranteed lowest prices. So get to PC Richard & Son today. Shop smart. Shop local. Shop PC Richard & Son. So 2014 to 2023, what's the biggest difference in the way the game was played from your perspective? The clock.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
The clock's huge. Clock's probably the most was the I would say the pitch clock was the most abrupt change. That was the biggest effect on a game on pitching that I've ever experienced that needed to be done right away. Like that was crazy. And it was hard. I struggled hard,
how
hard,
many
hard. And then
in
I had
this in spring training you probably only had, you know, how many innings did you pitch in this in spring training? 8, 10?
I had seven appearances, seven
Yeah.
or eight. Yeah.
Okay.
And not only that, it just wasn't an issue. It wasn't an issue because it just those it didn't matter.
Right,
The
right, right.
performance didn't matter.
Yeah.
So once performance mattered, that's when I slowed things down and I couldn't and I didn't know that didn't know I was gonna have no options. So yeah, that was big. Just the sheer amount of information we know about how things work, which I loved. I was always searching for that stuff. So I'm so glad that that is a revolution that's happened and that I've been able to be part of. But at the same time, man, everyone else knowing this stuff, like separating yourself has become harder and harder and harder. What, you know, pitchers are throwing way harder. The stuff is way better. Like the competition's way, but then again, everyone is getting those resources, so everyone's becoming the best version of themselves. So that's inherently a good thing. But yeah, the way the game's changed, and then just like the priority of like celebrating and all that kind of stuff, which I think is a good thing. It's making it more fun to watch, and it's like baseball's changing in parallel with culture, with pop culture and society, which is good. Because you have those things can't butt heads, or the business of baseball is not going to make money. So leaning into that stuff's good, but the whole narrative about respect and what that means now is just in sports. It's just a really interesting one for me at this point, because it's just a new generation that is used to seeing things being a certain way and interacting in certain ways, and can be a little bit more apathetic at times and not really give an S what people think. And we're seeing that more and more, but that's really valuable in situations, and sometimes it's not. So it's just different. It's different. But yeah, it's moving very quickly. I'm not a huge fan of the way, the speed at which rules are changed. For someone who spent their devoted their entire life for learning how to do a job at a high level, and then having the purview of that job changed drastically year to year, has become it got really, really exhausting really, really quickly. So,
Well, any other change besides the clock that was tough for you?
I mean, the pickoff should have been, because I've not been good at that in the past, but it really wasn't a big deal. I think I'm very lucky. I had an absolute cannon behind the plate with Shea. Shea threw out the most runners in the league this year, so that was helpful, and I will say that I didn't have a lot to do with that because I am not quick. But yeah, I think I gave like five stolen bases and caught three guys, which is like the
That's
lowest
fine.
to the highest rate of my
Yeah,
career
that's
by
good.
far. I think I have like six caught steals in my career, so half of them were this year. So it didn't really bother me that much, but it has bothered a lot of other guys. Bigger bases or whatever, the baseballs being changed or not changed constantly is more of an issue for me at times,
So you
but
mentioned that before they had. When you were in AAA, I guess they didn't use the major league baseballs they in AAA that they do now. When you went up, was it a it was you said it was a significant
oh yeah,
difference? And
they're
the
way back too. Back then, like the difference has been the ball, because their minor league balls were different. They just were on purpose. But yeah, it was a major difference. And then they started using the minor league balls, a version of that in big leagues, because they went farther, and that was 19, and then we've kind of just like been bouncing around. I think this last year was consistent the whole year. I think the same one was in play the whole time. For the most part, I think we found a good sweet spot. But for a second there, I'm like, I don't know what this ball's gonna do in terms of when I throw it and when it's hit. I have no idea, and that does make a difference. We do think about that stuff, but I think that's leveled out a little bit. But other than that, like, trying to think of other rules, like the guy in second. That was really not fun at first, and then I realized that like I kind of like it when there's a guy in second. It adds something to me, and I love stranding guys, so I kind of flipped it in my head. But that can get annoying. But other than that,
So
like, there's no
that's what
shifting. I think it's better for the game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I thought with the runner at second. Like it adds a little layer of strategy and intensity to every single pitch, which you don't have if you just start clean, especially now when everybody brings in these relievers that all throw 99 miles an hour, one after the other, after the other. You know, you're going to be here for another hour and a half while I get to the 15th inning. But now every single pitch has a little meaning to it. Does the guy bunt? Can the batter get the runner over? How do you, the
Yeah.
pitcher, what adjustments do you make to
Yeah,
prevent it from trying to get the runner over? All that stuff. Did it take, was that, yeah, good.
I think that adds, yeah, I think you're completely right there. And I think that when you get those guys coming in with that kind of stuff, like having the strategy that you're going to string hits together, not realistic. So what's your
No.
option? Hit a homer. So everyone's trying to hit a homer. And unfortunately, when you try to hit a homer, nobody does anything. But the guy's nasty. So now it's just strikeouts. I was at the Seattle game last year, 18 inning with the Astros, and I left in the 17th first of all, because I watched too much goddamn baseball that year. So like, I'm like, what am I doing? What are we doing? I was getting mad. It was funny. I was there, and so was Patrick Wisdom sitting down in front of me, and we're both like, I could just see him just like, dude, somebody just tried to hit a single. It was just watching. These guys are great, but like Cal and Kelnick are sticking out of my head because they were just like to a knee every swing, and it was just like grounded a second. I'm like, come on, like just hit a single. Someone hit a single, and there was like two hits for nine innings, both sides, and it was everyone through 99. And I'm like, just see if he can walk you, like someone get walked, let him walk you.
Yeah, the Astros had like six guys. They still have all those guys, but they would just bring in Abreu, Presley, Neris, who you probably played
Luis Garcia
with.
Threw five innings at 98-99 that game.
Yeah. Montero. They had
99.
Yeah. The guy with the long hair whose name begins with an S.
Danick.
Yeah.
Danick Montero. Yeah, they were very good.
Did you play with Neris with the Phillies? I know not
I
here.
Did. Maybe I played in the minors with him.
Yeah.
Double A. Double A for a little bit. He's my age.
Who were some of the younger than me? Who were some of the coaches that made an influence on you when you were coming up, when you were still in the Philly system, be it a pitching coach that you had, a coordinator? You know, who were some of the guys that kind of helped mold you the best?
Schrenke was in AAA with the Mets when I was there rehabbing last year. Lundy, Bob Malacky, Tom Filer in short season. Extended. He was a big routine guy, so I learned about routines from him. You know, and I've had guys with the. I mean, that's pretty much all my pitching coaches I had with the Phillies right there. For the most part, pretty. Learned how to be a pro from them. Continue that with the Twins. Got some interesting insights, and then the Twins brought in some guys, the analytic biomechanics guys, and that's where I started learning that most. And I learned from Hefner, and then I went to the Mets. Big reason for that because Jeremy Hefner was a pitching coach there, and me and him had a really great rapport and bounced ideas off each other all the time. And it was very much like that when I was there. And then this past year with Scott Emerson, he's a little bit more old school, and so that was interesting going back to that and picking his brain and kind of like giving my everything I've learned on the other side of things. It's been a wide array for sure.
All right, I'll hit you with a few more before I let you go. And I thank you for a few minutes. This has been a lot of fun.
Of course.
Who was the first hitter when you faced in a big league game where you're like, oh wow, I can't believe me. You know, you're probably 25 at the time, 26 when you made your big league debut. I get to face this guy.
Miguel Cabrera was a big one. I think my third start was against the Tigers.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were very, very good that year. Victor Martinez, JD Martinez, Castellanos, Kinsler, mm-hmm. Torrey Hunter. So Torrey and then V-Mart and then Miggy back-to-back-to-back was like,
yeah,
who am I? What am I doing here? Right? Because they were like – and then they had Scherzer, Verlander, and Price. Like those that team was supposed to win the World Series easy.
It's amazing. They made a couple – I just couldn't. There was a 1 year, I think it was 11. They swept through the ALCS and then had like 8 days off and made a million errors in the World Series and got swept by the Cardinals. And they were a big favorite. They had so many chances. 12. No, 12 was the Giants.
Yeah, 12. 12 was the Giants. So, no, 11 was Texas lost to.
Oh, you're right. Maybe it was 13. Oh no, maybe it was actually before that, but it might have been 10? Before that. Yeah, could no 10 was the Giants too. Whatever it was,
before, 10
but
they had and one 14 of those, was also the
Giants. Yeah. They wanted
10 was the Red Sox, so yeah, I don't know.
It might have been before that, but you know they had some really good teams. Who was the really toughest out team. You had in the big leagues?
Donaldson. Couldn't get Donaldson out.
Right-handed hitter. Why do you think so?
It just fastballs up or his butter. And I didn't have confidence in other stuff is not enough. Like I had a confidence in my changeup. My breaking ball was never my most confident pitch in, for throwing strikes anyways. And So he kind of just eliminated that, and he had both of the other two pitchers really well. I just didn't know what I was doing. I just didn't know. Now I face him now. I think I can make much, much better pitches than execute. I have the confidence to execute, but it was just there was a intimidation thing going on. I think he's 5 for 6 with four doubles and a homer or something. Like not that everything he's hit has been hit so hard. It was the second hit I gave up in the big leagues, and then it's just downhill from there. Altuve has been a tough one too. I think it's 4 for 6. But and then like Yan Gomes just dominated me for a while, and I didn't know about that. I was like, I can't. Because we get video of every time we face him. I went and looked at the video earlier this year when we faced him with the Cubs. I was like, got 5 hits off me. I don't remember any of this. One of them was a homer. When was that? And it's just because he's always been like the 7 or 8 hitter, and I just sporadically given up like in garbage time or something to him, and like just not making good pitches. So those three, yeah, those three. But Donaldson and Altuve, like, I'm acutely aware of that when they come up.
So your four playoff games with the Blue Claws, you gave up one run in 22 innings with 32 strikeouts. Which of the do you remember those starts? And you were talking about a little bit before, but you remember those four games where you were virtually unhittable?
Vaguely, like I don't even know who we play. I know we played the Greenville Drive both years. So I don't know, and Presley was on one of those games. That's the only reason I can remember that. And then I don't remember who we played in this. Did we play Hickory 1 year?
Yeah,
First year?
Hickory was your second year, and Kannapolis was your was the fir it was the first year was Kannapolis beat them and then beat Greenville. The second year you beat Hickory and then beat Greenville again.
Yeah, beat Greenville again. I remember that because it's like we played half the series at our place, drove 13 hours to go play in the other place. Like,
Well,
And
the
their
second
bus
one
was
there was
following us.
the second one had the fight.
Was it that the second one? I thought it was the first one.
No,
No,
that was
the second one was the fight because that was Parent. I remember Parent
and
doing this at the end of the dugout to
that
get us all out of the. I fell coming out. I remember falling coming out of the stairs. And there's that picture of Gump holding on to someone's
there.
Drake Britton, I think his name
Drake
it
Britton.
was Drake Britton. Added by the. We talked
Hazelmaker.
about this a lot, Presley and I. Talked about this a lot,
Yeah, that w
because he was like, "Where did you get there?" Because he was in the bullpen at the time. I didn't
How
get there
close
in time.
how close were you to even not to not signing and to go to college? I think you were going to go to UW, right?
Yeah, I actually told my dad I wasn't going to sign. I was going to go to college. He goes, "Want to try again?" I'm like, "I'm going to play pro ball." He's like, "Yeah, sure." And it wasn't quite like that, but it was more like, okay, but here's like you have a full ride, but baseball full rides aren't full rides. 30%. So like he's like, you're gonna be on the hook. Like I don't have like we don't have like you're gonna have to figure it out. You're gonna have to do financial aid or something. Like I just it's just not like not the whole thing. Like it's just not gonna so there's gonna be challenges and but if you wanna do it, just know, but like do you want to play professional baseball? I said 100%. He goes,
Now's the time.
do you want to start now? I just love school. I really love school. And I'll be honest, now that I'm retired, I still really love school and or I love learning and trying new things. And so I kept that up the whole time. I just kept like schooling myself. And now what I do now is I'm like learning all these new skills so that I can do stuff after.
Yeah, so that's the last question. So, what do you have planned now for the next weeks, months, years, or whatever, now that you have more free time or all the free time?
I'm trying to keep it. I'm trying to slow myself down because I tend to get ahead of myself. The media side of things is definitely the lane. I have a there's a possibility of having a designing my own producing my own show. How that's going to look and where it's going to be and who's going to be involved, I don't know yet. But I think that's a big goal. Like a commentary type show, I think. I use the Pat McAfee as an example because he's like kind of the only, he's like the real one who did it from the ground up himself. And he also retired earlier than people thought he should after he went to this Pro Bowl and then he retired because he's like, I don't want to punt anymore. So it's very similar. I'll be honest, I've taken some confidence from the way he handled it because we have very similar interests. So that I have always wanted to write. I have like a fantasy novel series that I've been working on for years at this point, that just needs to start getting put together. That could be a creative hobby. Photography and like film, like I've written a screenplay about around baseball, making rookie about a guy's rookie year.
That's awesome.
So it's a short film at the moment. It's only 7 minutes worth of the script, but I kind of want to film it to see if I can flesh out what a feature would look like. That's going to be, I'm learning all about that, and then I have my YouTube channel and stuff. So all this stuff's kind of connected. It's all going to kind of cross-pollinate and feed itself. But like being a talking head media personality is fair, like as a front-facing like public side of things will mostly be it, and then it'll just be the hobbies left, right, and center. Going hiking, doing like photography, going and stargazing, doing like all kinds of stuff, and just enjoying the things that I'm doing. But I want to say yes to a lot more stuff than I was able to do when I was playing.
How did you end up at the All-Star game? You said you're doing commentary or whatever.
SiriusXM Radio, the Power Alley guys. So
Yeah. Was that kind of like
Farron
a
and
test
Duquette.
drive for you, or your agent that kind of reached out? Like, how did that?
No, I've done the playoffs with them 3 years,
Okay.
where we did six to eight episodes in the playoffs, and we've done three or four with Odorizzi the last couple times has been my other player. Yeah, they just asked me if I wanted to be the player. Like they hadn't had a player on the field in 15 years or something. So that seemed kind of maybe a test.
Yeah.
And I my first interview was Whit Merrifield, and I just froze. It was bad. And it's funny because I faced Whit a lot. Like facing me and Whit like have had battles. And I was like, this is hard. And he goes, it's hard on them on that side of the mic, isn't it? I'm like, it is hard. These guys are good at it. I don't know what. And then I froze a little bit with Garrett Cole, just for like stumbled. And then after that it was smooth. It was butter. But yeah, I Bowden was with me that time, and he razzed me quite a bit. He's like, you're almost there. You almost got it. And I was like, okay, not helping. Not
It
helping, Jim.
happens. It
Yeah.
happens. You'll get the hang of it.
But
No, you'll do
it
great.
was fun though.
You'll do great.
It
I know we'll
was
be
a
hearing from you from one form or another now for a long time. Trevor May, thanks so much. It was a pleasure to get to catch up. Congratulations on a tremendous career and best of luck with what's ever coming up.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks to Trevor May for joining us on Hook, Line, and Splitter. Here today, he was a great guest, and he talked about wanting to move into the media side, and he's obviously very well spoken. He'll do a great job with whatever he wants to do. I know he said he had written a little screenplay that he wanted to get produced. Wants to do some writing, some reading. He said he's into photography, so all kinds of stuff. But whatever he ends up doing, I know he's going to be very successful at, just like he was as a pitcher, and especially with the Blue Claws. This is obviously a Blue Claws themed show. I wanted to give you his lines. These are his games in the postseason with the Blue Claws. 2009, he pitches for Jersey Shore against Kannapolis, game two of that series. 6 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 3 walks, struck out 8. Blue Claws win 9-0 and go on to the SAL Championship Series. In that series, he pitches against Greenville in game three. Blue Claws lost that game, not because of him. He went 5 innings, 3 hits, no runs, walked 2, struck out 3. Blue Claws lost that game 3-2, but they would win the championship the next day. The next year, he's back, 2010. And the Blue Claws are in Hickory for game one of that series, win 7-0. May went 6 2/3 innings, 4 hits, 1 walk, struck out 13. And one of the best pitched games by a Blue Claw in their franchise's postseason history, probably third best behind Matt Maloney against Augusta in their first clincher in 2006. And of course, the Spencer Howard no-hitter, 9-inning no-hitter against Kannapolis in 2018. But just an absolute dynamite performance from May in that game. He actually faced 25 batters in that game and struck out 13 of them. And the Blue Claws won that game 7-0. And then the next week in Greenville, and he pitched game one again of that series. Blue Claws lost 3-1. He went five innings, gave up four hits, one run, two walks, struck out eight. So pitched very well. Blue Claws just didn't score that much. Drake Britton, who would pitch in the big leagues later on, was the winning pitcher that day for Greenville. But Blue Claws won two championships. Trevor May gave him four tremendous starts in the postseason over 2 years. And, you know, it's an interesting kind of interesting thing. We talked about this a little bit, obviously, before. But, you know, he was actually sent down from Clearwater to Lakewood. Remember, back then, the Blue Claws were low A and Clearwater was high A. But he goes to Clearwater to begin 2010 and had a 5 ERA in 16 games, walked 61 batters in 70 innings. So just too many free passes. And, you know, I think it was a situation where you had the younger hitters from the Sally League that would chase some of his high fastballs and hammer curves in the dirt that, you know, they weren't chasing as much the older hitters at high A. And they sent him back down, and he was lights out with the Blue Claws, 2.91 ERA in 11 starts, win the championship, as we said. And I think it was a learning experience for him. And, you know, we talked about that before. And it just shows you that there's no shame in being sent down somewhere. And that's what happened for May. And everything obviously worked out. Had a great big league career. Pitched in a few postseasons in the big leagues with the Twins in 2019 and 2020. And then with the Mets in 2022. And obviously, the Mets got knocked out by San Diego in the first round of that season. And the Twins had struggled in the first round of their series as well. They lost to Houston in 2020 in two games, and they lost in 2019, to the Yankees. They got swept in that series. Remember, the Twins didn't win a postseason game for all those years until this season. So they, but he made a few postseasons with Minnesota, had a really great career, and onward and upward for him in retirement. So we thank Trevor May for joining us. It was a real pleasure to catch up with him, and we'll wish him certainly the best of luck in the future for Trevor May, who I know you're going to hear from again with whatever he does, and he's going to be very successful in doing that, be it as a talking head on TV or as a talk show, a radio talk show host or author, whatever, all those things. He's going to be fantastic in whatever he chooses to do moving forward. It was great to catch up with Trevor. Thanks so much to Trevor May for joining us. This is Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Have a wonderful day, everybody. We'll have a few more of these coming up over the next few weeks and months, and we'll be back. Opening day, remember, of course, is April the 5th here at Shoretown Ballpark. Have a wonderful weekend, everybody.